Juno Afternoon is made possible in part by Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for more than 15 years. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests today are here with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Welcome, everyone. Would you please introduce yourselves for our listeners? We will start with you.
Sure. Thank you. I'm Christy Dillingham. I am the Education Director at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Rodriguez, and I'm the Director of Operations for Dual Language Education of New Mexico.
And I'm Patrick Guarito with Dual Language Education in Mexico as well, and I'm the coordinator for tribal initiatives.
And tonight you are the speaker for the last in the lecture series, Approaches to Indigenous Language Revitalization. Tell me about your organization, Dual Language Education of New Mexico.
So Dual Language Education of New Mexico is a nonprofit. We've been in operation since 2002, and we started supporting schools in New Mexico with a new grant that was available to states around dual language. So it really started around schools working together to support each other with what it is that they need to know. And since then, we've grown into becoming a national organization and hosting the biggest dual language conference in the United States.
Is dual language education fully implemented in schools in New Mexico?
There are schools and districts in New Mexico that have really taken to it and implemented pre-K through 12th grade, which is what we're really looking for. But we also work in many other states. So we're in Illinois, we're in Oregon, we're in Washington, Colorado. And, dual language really is picking up around the country. And, we're very happy to see that move forward.
And what does dual language mean? What does dual language education mean in terms of your organization and how you work?
So dual language is taking instruction for students from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade and having them really immerse themselves in two languages. The majority of the programs we work with are English-Spanish programs around the country. But, we recently started working with the state of Hawaii, and they're looking at expanding into other languages than the Hawaiian language. So we really are trying to, through the immersion, give kids the opportunity to become readers, writers, and speakers of the two program languages.
Patrick, I understand your specialty is dual language with indigenous languages. Is that a good definition?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Would you tell me a little bit about how you're working to implement dual language education with indigenous languages?
I think one of the things that we have to ask the question first is in terms of indigenous languages is what is the purpose of teaching the language in the context of school, right? So, for example, some communities might be thinking about producing speakers, and that might be different than what in the context of what school is, which is teaching academics. So one of the things that we talk about and try and be very mindful about is how do we approach indigenous communities in terms of teaching the language in the school setting. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have is really working with communities, tribal communities or indigenous communities, and really having conversations around why what is the purpose of teaching the language in itself, okay? So it might be just basically to produce speakers, to carry the language on to the next generation of speakers. And so those are some of the things that I think that we're trying to work with in terms of tribal communities. It's still under the umbrella of dual language because dual language talks about equity of language. Dual language talks about how language should be at the same status as the language of English, right? And so then there's other things like social, cultural piece of students, emotional piece. So it still falls under that umbrella of dual language because dual language is one way, two way immersion. There's all these different models, but I think dual language in itself is the umbrella, and indigenous language certainly falls under that.
How is perception of language use in indigenous communities? How's that played a part in your work?
Of course, because of the encroachment of external things like colonization, right, on tribal communities. Over time, through generation, of course, tribal communities begin to view English more than their community language. So in other words, English could be seen as a higher status if you speak English or you have an educational degree. And so having that knowledge of the indigenous knowledge and the language, you might not be seen at the same status. So over time, you know, because of a wage economy that we're in, the more educational degree you have, the more experience you have, that gives you status. But that's an external measurement compared to indigenous communities, because indigenous communities, you might be a speaker of the language, a fluent speaker. You might have the indigenous knowledge, but that's not measured in degrees or anything like that. So how do you then change the perception of not only language, but the knowledge in itself that goes with language, and make it the same as having compared to someone that has a PhD, right? Mm-hmm. And so things like that, you know, I think those are things we talk about. And, of course, the other thing is when people talk about perception on language, it's really elevating that meta-linguistic awareness, really thinking about your language. And how many of us really do that? How many of us really think about our language? So those are some things we talk about in tribal communities.
You've stated that appreciation for the language becomes the blueprint for engagement and hopefully support for indigenous language learning in schools. Does that refer to appreciation for the language among indigenous communities or all communities within a given school district or area?
I think in this case what we're talking about is because of colonization, because of how tribal communities are now seeing their language and the perception of language, the idea is to elevate the status, to elevate to that awareness to say that it's okay to be indigenous. It's okay to speak my language. It's okay to be who I am. It's okay to be a Native American or Alaskan Native in 2020, right? Mm-hmm. And so elevating that appreciation within what the community assets are, what the community expectation of what success is from an indigenous perspective, elevating that and say, okay, it's okay to be this. I don't have to be this, but I can be this within my community. And then appreciating that has value. And that goes to the motivation of why we want to the young people. Oh, I want to learn my language because I want to have this as well. And so that's what we mean by elevating that and then having a sense of appreciation and then validating that and taking that to the school and say, okay, this is what the community wants in terms of language learning. This is what the community is expecting for their young learners. And then the school then says, okay, we take that and that becomes the blueprint. So in other words, it becomes sort of like the community or the school supporting the community, not the school saying we need your support. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's that paradigm shift that we talk about. It's really because the school is part of the community. The school is really part of the community in general.
Absolutely.
And so we don't want to draw lines and say, you know, here's the school, here's the community. You know, we're all part of this. And so it really becomes a community effort. And so the school then can say, in Juneau, Alaska, this is what the community is saying, and this is how we're going to defend that narrative or that mandate, whatever coming down from wherever, right? So that's what we mean by the blueprint.
Do you have an idea of what the status of indigenous language in New Mexico is? How many speakers or how many languages are there? How many speakers are left?
Well, in New Mexico, I think there's eight languages that I know there's there. There's 22 tribes. It varies from different communities. For example, in one community, you might have less than maybe 50 speakers because they're a small community. In other communities, you might have, like Navajo Nation, you would still have like 250,000 speakers. Mm. But given that's still at a level of what we call of a need for urgency. And so I think across the board, I think in general, I think it's probably safe to say that indigenous languages are endangered, you know. But I think tribes and communities really need to say, what do we do now? You know, there has to be a sense of urgency. We can't expect somebody else to tell you that our language is dying. It is. Mm-hmm. It's right there. It's right in our face. And how do we deal with that? So.
Dual language education in schools, to me at least, it seems like a very smart, very, very clearly a good idea. The science is there. We know that especially young children have a much easier time learning language at an early age. Has it been easy to implement some of your programs, your training in schools in the state or in the nation? Or what challenges have you faced?
I wouldn't say it's easy. It does take commitment by district leaders, school boards, local communities to really get behind the initiative. And, you know, the implementation in the classroom, it requires lots of training for teachers to understand how the two languages work together, how they're similar, how they're different, and lots of materials to make sure that, again, as Patrick was saying, the languages have that equal status within the program and within the schools and the district.
Are there many educators in these schools, the schools that you work with, that do speak two or more languages, particularly an indigenous language?
Yeah, so schools that have committed to having a dual language program, you know, it is a requirement that they do have fluent speakers. There's 90-10 programs and there's 50-50 programs. So in the 90-10 program, students start out in kindergarten 90% of their day in that program language. So it could be the Klingon language. It could be, in many of our cases, it's 90% of the day in Spanish. And then each year, they decrease the Spanish and increase English by 10%. So it'd be 80-20 in first grade, 70-30 in second grade, and so on, till it becomes 50-50, and then it stays that way all the way through graduation. Other programs start with 50-50, and they keep that all the way through graduation from kindergarten or pre-K.
Very interesting stuff. I didn't start learning a second language until high school, and I wish I'd learned much earlier. So I have appreciation for what you do. The talk tonight, 5 p.m. at the Walter Soboleff Building, 105 South Seward Street in Juneau, downtown Juneau. How do you feel today about being in Alaska here on the land of the Aquan?
Certainly it's cold. The cold down in New Mexico is dry.
Yes.
Here it's, I guess we call it wet, humid cold, and you can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
The rain is good. Moisture is good. We don't get a lot of rain in New Mexico,
right.
So this is like, wow, this is cool. The mountains are right there. You don't have to look, you know.
So.
Yeah, we can't wait for the fog to clear so we can really see the beauty of our surroundings.
Well, don't hold your breath. is this your first visit to Alaska?
Yes.
To Juneau?
It is.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have any time to take in the sights while you're here?
A little bit of time. We know that there's a glacier close by, mm-hmm. and others that are in the area, so we definitely want to see what we can get to.
All right. Christy Dillingham, I'm going to turn to you now just to ask for any other updates or details about tonight or upcoming events for SHI.
Sure. So this is the last lecture for our lecture revitalization series, and we have committed to interviewing all of our lecturers and putting out a new podcast called Roots and Stems. So that is currently out. You can find that information on our website, as well as if you can't make it out tonight or you missed any of our previous lectures, we are videotaping them and getting them out on our YouTube channel. So you can always find those links via our website or just look us up on YouTube for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. But we hope you come out tonight if you're interested in learning more. Again, 5 p.m. at the Walter Soboleff Building in the Klan House.
Thank you. Michael and Patrick, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners today? Anything that you'd like to discuss that I maybe didn't ask you about?
You know, dual language is it's a great program. It's a great way for students to be able to learn two languages and, you know, really value the culture that comes with it. So, you know, it's not just something for native speakers or students who grew up with that heritage. It's something that, you know, 35 years of research shows helps students to really have that metalinguistic and metacognitive processing that helps them in school in general. So it's good for all students.
Right. We didn't really talk about why it would be important to learn more than one language. For many people, that's kind of a given, but I think that's an important point to make. So thank you.
Absolutely.
How about you, Patrick?
I guess one thing I just like to share is that I think for indigenous communities, when we talk about language revitalization, it's something that's relatively new, if you really think about it, in recent years. I know this morning we were having a conversation with some parents at one of the local schools. One of the parents made a comment that when I went to school, there was no language class. But that's just like two or three decades ago. And now we have our languages being taught in school. And so I think what tribal communities or indigenous communities are facing in terms of the language revitalization, this is very new territory. And so that's the reason why I think we say to communities, the answers and the solutions are not somewhere out, out there. It's really within the community. The answers and the resources and the solutions and the options are all within your community. And that's where and it's best for you guys to figure that out and do it your way, not somebody else's way. But again, you know, language revitalization, you know, it can happen just like in a blink of an eye in terms of time. Because when you really think about it, if you only have less than 200 speakers, two more generations, then that's it.
Yes.
That's it. And so every year, I guess, in the world, a language goes dormant. And so I just want to say this to people that are listening. The question, why we do it, for some of us, why we do it is a question that was asked to us. Do you want to be part of that generation that is to be known for letting the language die? And that goes to people who are speakers. If you're a speaker of the language, do you want to be known to be part of that generation that let the language die? And for us, it's like, no. You know, that's a resounding answer is no. So let's do something about it before it does.
Excellent note to end on. Please come out to the talk tonight, 5 p.m., Walter Soboleff Building, again, down in the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute Building. Patrick, Michael, and Christy, thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you,
Shelley.
For having us. Mm-hmm.